This is the Automotive Repair Podcast Network.
Welcome, everyone, to yet another episode of Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z. I'm Matt Fonsland. Power stays in the shadows. That and more after a word from our sponsors, Autel and Pico Technology. Are you chasing elusive automotive problems? Pico Technology empowers you to see what's really happening. Pinpoint faults in sensors, wiring, and components with unmatched accuracy. Picoscope oscilloscopes transform your diagnostic capabilities. Visit PicoAuto.com, that's PicoAuto.com, and revolutionize your diagnostics today. Autel delivers award-winning automotive diagnostic tools trusted by technicians across North America. Backed by Autel North America experts in sales, training, and technical support. From drivability diagnostics and TPMS service to ADAS and advanced safety systems, Autel helps technicians follow OEM procedures and repair with confidence. Learn more at Autel.com. Well, I'm going to keep going with the game theory stuff, mainly because it's been on my mind a lot. I have a couple episodes already on it. Hopefully you're finding some interest in it, or it's at least creating thoughts or consideration, conversations, stuff like that. I guess I want to delve into what I think is a really interesting clash, or I don't want to say competition. So I don't think that's necessarily what I mean. Something that emerges, not from game theory specifically, but something game theory addresses, that we have something called official game and not unofficial, but shadow game. And I think once you hear them, it will make a lot of sense. And I kind of hope it hits hard. I hope it hits really hard, because the definition of official game is really what management thinks it's trying to accomplish. Meaning, I don't mean just to be profitable, although that's very much part of it. It's the message that they convey to their staff and the public about what they do, what their values are. Basically, kind of like what Simon Sinek says, like their why. This can be everything from, we only, you know, use the best parts. We stand behind our work, no questions asked. We take care of our people if they're having staff meetings. You guys are like family. We want to pay you better than anybody else in the area. We only do the best work. You know, we're only going to do things the right way. We're going to enable you to do the work that needs to be done. Stuff that we've all heard. If you've worked for a repair shop, you've heard all of this and so much more. So much more. And I don't even mean that to be, I don't know, sarcastic, or I guess I'm not looking to read into that too much. But it's true. We've heard it all. Then there's something called the shadow game. I hate to say it runs contrary. That's not necessarily accurate, although it can be. The shadow game is kind of like what really happens, maybe with or without management's knowledge, or management is heavily involved and doesn't consider the consequences of it rivaling the official game. Like, what is the effect of this shadow game on the official game? Like, or how the official game is interpreted or accepted? Meaning, I want everyone to do the best work possible, the highest quality. I want you to do stuff the right way. I want you to take the time to do all these tasks the right way. However, your incentive plan, your compensation package is going to be heavily weighted on production. That can kind of rival or contradict a little bit. Not always, but it can be. Another thing might be, I want to put you in the best position possible to make all, you know, whatever money, this percentage beyond the cost of living of the area, like whatever that is. You know, a lot of times we hear about the six figures a year. Maybe in some areas of the country, that is a very, very good wage. Other areas of the country, you're probably sharing about one bedroom apartment with another family. it's hard to just use hard numbers like that, right? But let's just say for the case, you know, for the sake of discussion, a desirable wage, you know, so this much money an hour, a week, a month, you know, whatever. And I need, you know, from you to be able to write that check, I need this type of performance, whatever that is. We suspect it's hours billed, correct? Usually. However, the shop process or procedures or processes or the flow really acts as its own governor. And I mean governor as in like what's used on engines to hold our, you know, hold things below a certain RPM, you know, a restrictor plate if we want to go racing, a limiter of some sort. It becomes its own limiter for hitting certain numbers because they can't be hit because the support structure, the support process is not there. That would be part of the shadow game. And then I guess I would like to give other examples before we start going about behaviors that emerge from that. It might be other things that aren't so, I don't know, blatant, you know, as part of the structure, like the compensation plan is part of the structure. You could be talked about are told about this when they're conveying to you their official gain, but it also contributes to the shadow game. Another example might be something to the tune of favoritism, which we've seen in shops where the service advisors favor or a service advisor favors a certain mechanical specialist or certain technical specialist, and they give them all the gravy. Ownership or management allows lenience in certain areas for certain people, but not others, or being told about how important operational equipment and safety is. But then when you go to them with tools or equipment that is not functioning correctly or is not safe, little to anything is done. These are the things that contribute to the shadow game about what's really going on. I don't mean shadow necessarily always has to be the truth, but a lot of times it is. It's the game within the game, if you will. It's also like just a misunderstanding, I think, of not considering systems and not considering the nature of, I suppose, ultimately psychology, but also just like the nature of incentive, the nature of self-efficacy. What is the effect on somebody that is kind of sold on an idea and then they find out that it was really, I don't even want to call it a lie. It could be. Some cases it could be. A lot of times it's, you can't see the forest for the trees, or you're just not in a position to see, meaning it's kind of a game of imperfect information. Management doesn't necessarily know. And I'll lump, let's just say front of house. We'll not even say management. The front of house is not necessarily keyed in on or aware of certain processes in the shop. We could argue the processes or techniques or choices are born of a broken system. But either case, the front of house might have an idea or a belief that certain procedures are being followed, but they don't know that whether it's, you know, a team agreement or individuals acting what you would call locally rational, skipping things or not doing things a certain way because they've been taught by the shadow game, things won't be rewarded or the repercussions aren't coming, something of that nature. But yet now front of house can't know what's going on in the back. In the back of house, a lot of times doesn't know what's going on in the front. And because of imperfect information, we have misunderstandings where it could be favoritism. Like the back of house wondering why certain things went a certain way. Like, why was this job given to this person or that person? It could have been favoritism. Maybe they honestly thought that that was the right person to give it to. But because of imperfect information and poor communication, lack of safety to go up there and ask, or lack of skills to go over and ask without putting everybody on the defensive, assumptions are allowed to run wild. So we have this official game that management might truly believe, ownership or, you know, whoever's mainly in charge or the group of people mainly in charge, they may really believe wholeheartedly that is everything that they have built, all the systems, all the rewards, all the incentives, all the packages, all the processes, everything is built around the idea of doing things the right way. You have to understand, they may really believe that. And that's why they won't see the shadow game. On the flip side, because of misinterpretations or because of how the structures are, you start creating shadow of the game, the shadow game, or I guess what you would call shadow moves, that every inspection is expected to be done. Every point is expected to be looked at. But because a lot of shops, I'm off the cuff, I don't personally know any, but a lot of shops, the mechanical and technical specialists are expected to do vehicle inspections for quote unquote free. If they're in a heavy commission or flat rate, pure flat rate facility, a lot of times they are expected to do those inspections for free. The shop's not charging the client for the inspection. Therefore, the mechanical or technical specialist doing, maybe it's an inspection specialist, isn't getting paid directly to do that. The payment comes if you find something wrong, something that needs to be addressed. That behavior to skip things is kind of born of that. I think we have to be able to explain things without necessarily excusing them, right? Because if you deem something unfair, you try to address it with management, they're not going to buck. They're not going to move. They're not going to change. They're not going to pay X amount of dollars for an inspection. You did sign up. Like, you did accept whatever offer to work there. Maybe it wasn't in the fine print. Maybe it was. Maybe you were flat out lied to. Maybe you kind of knew about it and it didn't bother you until it did. I think the mature thing to do then is to put your notice in and go work somewhere else. There are shops out there that don't do such things. Or listen and have the conversation. Explain, and probably not going to use such terms as official game and shadow game, but with that knowledge, you can go in and explain how this is kind of what is sold. This is kind of what's been advertised to us, to clients, all the things. And yet this is how things really work. They're far apart. They're not the same. That has to be done. I don't think excusing ourselves from doing deviant things, even nefarious, honestly, or just being dishonest because we don't like the system we're in, or the honestly, going with this, you know, last few episodes, this game we're in, doesn't really allow for us to do that. It might explain the desire to, but actually doing it, I don't think it's really justified. You can go to work to change it, improve the game. I would say try to get the official game and the shadow game to be closer, meaning they're not so different. Will you ever achieve where official game and shadow game are perfectly aligned? I don't think so. I think it's impossible. It's definitely worth trying, but humans are involved, right? And that's not to say, like, you know, this is close enough. That should be the work of management. And management, that's kind of their job. They do need our help from the bays, from the employee's perspective. They need to be updated on what we see as being rewarded or how the processes are pushing us or dictating what we do or rival that of what we've been telling or being told is the goal of the shop. What is our mission statement? Well, okay, these things kind of contradict that or force these contradictions or force these deviations. That's worth talking about. And if ultimately management will not budge, then it's time to find a new place to work. And I fear that there's an assumption that every shop essentially runs the same. There's maybe a lot of them that run a certain way, but then there's a lot of them that run another way. Ultimately, if enough people refuse to be put into situations where they're not supported, especially for what management states is the purpose, is the goals, and you're not in a position that the actual processes and the support are trying to help achieve, if enough people refuse to play, something has to give, right? The doors close for good, or management starts making changes. That could be abused, of course, and don't really want that. But I think too often we give ourselves a lot of lenience or others a lot of lenience where we see something that is unfair, and it might be genuinely unfair. And yet trying to stick around and break the system isn't necessarily the right thing to do either. It brings up an interesting perspective though, right? You work for a facility that somehow, like golden handcuffs, it's very difficult to leave that job because pay, benefits, capability, whatever it is, leaving there would be difficult. However, it's difficult to work there because what their mission is isn't really what their systems are perpetuating. And there you sit. If I leave, I lose all this that's very difficult to replace. Compensation, whatever that may be. Freedom. Maybe the shop's pretty lenient on time off. But on the flip side, you feel like you're losing yourself a little bit every day because of it. Now you're there just for the paycheck. Management doesn't want that either, or they shouldn't. There's nothing good about having people show up to work for a paycheck. That's a subject for a different episode. Electric and hybrid vehicles are here, and with them, a new era of diagnostics. Don't get left behind. Pico Technologies EV diagnostic kits are your all-in-one solution to safely and efficiently service any electric or hybrid vehicle. From comprehensive high-voltage system analysis and installation testing to guided step-by-step procedures, Pico puts the power of confident repairs right at your fingertips. Future-proof your shop, boost your efficiency, and become the go-to expert for the next generation of cars. Visit PicoAuto.com today. That's PicoAuto.com. This episode of Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z is brought to you by Autel. Autel is a global developer and manufacturer of award-winning professional automotive diagnostic tools and service equipment, trusted by technicians, educators, and shop owners across North America. With diagnostics at their core, Autel's real-world solutions support repair workflows ranging from full system vehicle diagnostics to servicing the most advanced automotive technologies. What sets Autel North America apart is the team behind the tools. Dedicated experts across sales, training, and technical support, each bringing deep, hands-on experience supporting professional technicians. When questions arise, you're working with people who understand the vehicles, the procedures, and the real-world demands of modern repair. Whether diagnosing complex drivability concerns, servicing TPMS systems, validating repairs, or working with ADOS and advanced safety technologies, Autel tools are engineered to support accurate, efficient repairs in strict accordance with OEM procedures and standards. To learn more about Autel and their diagnostic solutions, visit autel.com, AUTEL.com. I keep on hammering this home that it's not necessarily sticking up for anyone, right? Management has to use its tools, its resources, which is data and the people working there, talking, communicating, to get a really good assessment of what is really going on in the shop and why. Does this emerge because of our processes or lack of, or systems or lack of, that actually goes against or takes away from what our real stated goals are? And then our stated goals, do we really believe in those? Or do we just say them because it sounds cool? So the mission statement on the wall, is that just another marketing ploy? They have to be honest. I don't know how many people are really that, nefarious. Are there some? Sure. Do they get a lot of the press? Sure. But are most people that way? Most shop owners or managers that way? Not that I've seen. Depending on the system, can they be forced? And again, we're talking about this behavior that's maybe can be explained, but not necessarily excused. Playing a certain game, I'm being a certain level of selfish to achieve their needs and goals that then takes away from the shop or from others in the facility. And that might happen more often. And again, I think it's because it's just not looked at. I don't know about you, but I don't think I have ever heard anyone in our world talking about official game, shadow game, or really anything along those lines about your stated purpose, your stated mission statement, the goals, and then what your systems actually perpetuate. And maybe that happens in management classes and Maybe coaches bring it up. I don't know. But it's nothing I've ever seen. And it's something that needs to be brought into the light and talked about. And again, a lot of this stuff's been around for a long time. A lot of these concepts have been around for a long time. They're nothing new. It's just either concepts or terminology we've not used or heard about. That's unfortunate. Hopefully we can turn that around. Hopefully we can change that. If you're listening or watching and you have stories about this, leave some down in the comments. Let's see what's really out there. What do you notice? What are you being told? Like when you were hired or at all the shop meetings, when somebody's talking, you know, usually leadership, about what the shop goals are or what their values are, what the shop's why is, or what's the owner's why or the shop manager's why. And then what do you see happening in reality due to things not within the systems? Like, it's not written anywhere that we're going to favor this specialist over another. Where it's not written anywhere that we're going to ignore these rules or whatever for certain people and not others or altogether. You know, safety is our top priority. Well, that hoist, you know, goes up kittywampus, right? You know, one side's lifting up faster than the other. Sometimes we have to use a jack or the forklift to lift up one side to release the lock so we can lower it. That should really be fixed, and it just never gets done. Shop safety is of utmost importance. What message is being sent? Process that for a while, and we can revisit this again. Really looking forward to the comments, and also just about this line of topic. Got questions, multiple, about my Rushmore for comedians. That one almost, it kind of breaks me. It's hard. It's really hard to think about, right? Because you get stuck in this, like, well, what are my four favorites? But then, like, it's the Mount Rushmore. It's not necessarily my favorites. So any Mount Rushmore of stand-up comedy, I don't know how you don't have Richard Pryor on there. Richard Pryor is on there. I'm going to go Lenny Bruce. If you're not familiar with Lenny Bruce, I would strongly urge you to go look at his stuff and then just look at what he did. Like he went to jail over his comedy. I don't know. Groundbreaking. And then after that, it just gets rough for me because like George Carlin, I adore George Carlin. I do. Like a lot of times listening to him or watching him, it was less about laughing because he was so funny. It was because he was right. Like he was pointing out things to make you think and you kind of chuckle in acknowledgement. And then there's like Robin Williams, who I'm not sure he ever went up there with a plan. A ball of energy, like an explosion of energy up there, which I don't know, may or may not have led to some joke stealing. In the interviews I've seen with him, when he would bring it up, I really want to believe that it was due to him improvising and trying to just keep spitting out material and to fill the gaps, he would sputter out somebody else's material. And then my understanding is he wrote a lot of checks for that. I don't know if that makes it right. I don't know if he makes my Mount Rushmore of comedians either. So I think for sure I have Pryor, Lenny Bruce. I mean, I personally really like Bill Burr. I don't know if he's on the Rushmore, though. Dave Chappelle. I mean, I think there's a lot of people worthy of being put up there. Stephen Wright. Like, have you ever seen him? But is he on the Rushmore? Another one that doesn't get mentioned probably near enough is Steve Martin. I mean, at one time, he was about as big as it got. But was he groundbreaking? What did he lay the foundation for? In their heyday, was there ever a comedian as big as Andrew Dice Clay? Like, that guy sold out Madison Square Garden when no comedians did that. There's a lot of rock bands couldn't. And then Kinison. Sam Kinison. Are they on the Rushmore? I think I have a controversial pick. I think I have to put her on there. We're talking about stand-up comics. So I might be wrong. I don't think about Lucille Ball being a stand-up comic. So I'm going to go with, I think we have to put Joan Rivers on there. And you might have to go way back to look at her stuff. But she was brilliant and groundbreaking. And it was back when comedy was not good to women. And she was one of the best. And if you listen to a lot of comedians talk about their favorite comedians and who they looked up to or who they were just gobsmacked by, her name comes up a lot. So I've got Pryor, I've got Joan Rivers, Lenny Bruce. I think he's got to be on there. I so badly want to put Carlin on there, but I really do. I can't even convey to you how much I liked that guy, how much I do like that guy. But I like Robin too. But I think like most people, we remember Robin more for his acting roles than we do his stand-up comedy. So I need a fourth. Dice Man. I watched a documentary. I think it was a documentary on like MTV for when comedy ruled the world. Last chapter was like, the Dice Man cometh. When he hit. And then how do you ignore Chris Rock? Okay, I'm down to Chris Rock or Dave Chappelle. I don't think I can go wrong with either one. And Eddie Murphy. And Bill Burr, man. He might be my favorite. I don't know if he's on. I don't know if he gets to the Rushmore. Maybe someday. Maybe it's Matt Rife. Just kidding. I mean, when Murphy was on, he was as funny as anybody. But so was Rock. So was Chappelle. I'm giving it to Chappelle. I just think the guy's hilarious. I think he's good at walking controversy right on the line and stepping over it a little bit and stepping on the other side of it. And otherwise, it's take everybody off and just put Bob Uecker, because he's gone now, but he might have been the most naturally funny person I've ever seen in my life. I mean, to listen to comedians talk about Bob Uecker, or just celebrities in general, people in general, talk about spending time with Bob Uecker and how hard they laughed. Norm Macdonald has such great stories about it. Norm Macdonald is a comedian's comedian. Is he on the Rushmore? I just don't think so. I think I'm going with Pryor, Lenny Bruce, Joan Rivers, and with a lot of hesitancy because of the so many greats. I'm going to go with Chappelle and wait to get beat up in the comments. So if you're watching this on YouTube, don't forget to give this a like. It really helps the channel. I'd love to hear your thoughts on the official game versus shadow game, what you've seen in your shops or other shops, and also who are your top four. Or really, who's your Mount Rushmore? Because four favorites isn't necessarily the same as a Mount Rushmore. So that's a part I struggle with. But I don't know. I think three of mine are knocked out of the ballpark. The fourth one, you could rotate a lot of people through there and still have a really, really strong Mount Rushmore. So thank you very, very much for listening. And thank you so very much to our sponsors, Pico Technology and Autel. Thank you to the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. Even Tracy. She's got to get her, well, it can't be her just due, but she's got to get something due. And yeah, until next time, take care.
You've been listening to Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z with Matt Bonslow on the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. Download our exclusive podcast app at automotiverepairpodcastnetwork.com, because the best conversations in the industry start here. Want Matt to cover a specific topic? Check the show notes for his email. Your input matters.